Hello and welcome to Zero Hanger, where we'll be looking back on all the action from round six and previews for the week ahead, some talking points that have come out of the first few rounds of the season and much, much more. Joining me today is Aidan Cellini. Hey Aidan, how are you, mate?
Good, Mitch. Yourself?
Yeah, very good, very good.
Good to hear.
Bit to cover today. We'll look at more MRO action. We'll have three cases at the tribunal this week. We'll have a look at maybe who Collingwood might be able to find to replace Nathan Murphy, whether that's in the club or potentially through list management pools. We can also have a look at our MVP votes, rookie rankings. But one thing, I guess, at the end of round six, finally got there, is we're out of the bye rounds. Some people aren't a big fan, particularly when your club's not playing that week. And I guess this is all subsequent from opening round and the flow-on effects. But we finally hit some parity with the end of the week that's coming. But no more bye rounds, 9 games a week. Are you happy? What's your kind of final verdict on bringing in opening round, but then also having, I guess, 4 or 5 rounds of, clubs with, having buys throughout the first, 7 rounds?
Yeah, I mean, one, and I think I've said this before, I love the concept of opening round, just spreading the game across all states and all parts of the country. I think it was a great initiative from the AFL, doing something different. So obviously, they've brought in, what's the place in Adelaide there?
Gather round.
Jeez, I was going to say gather round. Sorry about that, guys. Just had a mental brain fade there. Long weekend. But, yeah, opening round, I loved, just trying something new, experimenting. I think Andrew Dillon wanted to try something new to kind of stamp his, stamp on the game. Jeez, I'm really stuffing up at the moment. But, the introduction of it, there was going to be some sort of growing pains. And we did notice that maybe the first couple of weeks with supporters not enjoying their clubs, maybe having 1 or 2 games in the first couple of weeks and having the game off. I think Carlton and Brisbane were round 2 after only playing the first 2 games of the season. So it was a little bit interesting initially to take on. But looking back now, I think the AFL did really well in making sure that the fixture was as equal as possible. As we just realised or noticed, Melbourne and Richmond had the bye just the weekend gone, and they've got a Wednesday matchup for the Anzac Day Eve clash as well. So I think in terms of that and looking at it holistically, I think it was a success. I'm sure there probably is areas of improvement, but I think for the first time round, I think it's actually been quite good as an initiative that the AFL can continue going forward in next year and beyond.
Yeah, I don't think there will be too many clubs that would complain that had the buys, or we didn't hear any. Not many really lost momentum, as you mentioned. They either took bad form into it and brought bad form out of it, or went in pretty strongly into a break and were really able to make any adaptations that they needed, and then came out, again, pretty strongly on the other side of the buy. So not like what we've seen in the mid-season with that kind of post-buy curse, which I think might be a bit of a myth anyway, especially over the last few seasons. But yeah, I think mostly positives. Opening round was a success, and then a lot of questions were going to kind of be, why is my club playing this week and it's round 2? Which, fair enough, I get you kind of want to build something quite early. But like I said, there was no real issues in the wake of those clubs having those buys. As you mentioned, Richmond and Melbourne having to play on a Wednesday night for Anzac Eve in a traditional clash, having them have the break and no really short turnaround works. Collingwood had the break the week prior, so they were fresh enough heading into Saturday's game against Port Adelaide. And yes, a 5-day turnaround isn't nice, but you get a couple of them a year. And I guess that's another thing that the AFL have had to manoeuvre around, is having each club have their 5-day breaks, and some of that kind of was alleviated with the bye rounds. Another one as well, while it was most weeks, it was just one less game. It just seemed like there was a good amount of footy. Like, I'm not saying we can really have too much, but, less games where we've got 2 games on at once and clashing, and really it's just one game ends and straight into another. So I went with 9 games back this week. We'll probably have a couple more clashing on Sunday nights Saturday nights and maybe Sunday afternoons. But yeah, it just seemed, one game finishes, another game started. So for footy lovers, they weren't having to pull up a few screens and watch a few games at once. So yeah, overall big tick for me as a final verdict for, I guess, opening round and the flow-on effects that the bye rounds had. And came with it. Another week, as we mentioned, more MRO. And this is going to be a big one, obviously, for GWS with Toby Green and Jesse Hogan both having their 1-game bans challenged. So, obviously, Toby Green's was that rough conduct marking contest on Jordan Boyd, Jesse Hogan's strike on Lewis Young. We'll start with the latter before we get into Green's, and then even mention maybe some Tom Barrass's one on Michael Walters, which is also a 1-game ban and also being challenged by West Coast Hogan, well, really across all three, I can't see any of them being reduced to fines or being cleared all up unless there is, you know, a circumstance that, that really is kind of outside of the norm, which we have seen in recent weeks, not to say any of these three players would be getting off the same way Charlie Cameron did with that, I guess, good bloke kind of quota. And having a clean record. Hogan, I think, don't think he's had that kind of record across his career. I think I don't really have to mention Toby Green's record, albeit, you know, quite clean over the last year or two. And then Tom Barras, I think good enough, but not played enough. So, into the Hogan one, fairly off the fair way off the ball, intentional, high, and yeah, obviously, albeit low impact. These are pretty easy ones, a bit different to the Pendlebury one that we had on Lachie Neale, which you know, had it being graded intentional, but they were kind of close to the contest, where in this case, seemed like Hogan and Young were some fair way from the ball, and this one, like I said, might be a pretty easy one for the tribunal to deal with.
Yeah, I think so. I think we've both agreed, yeah, all three are probably not going to be playing this coming round or this weekend, but yeah, with Hogan's, yeah, off the ball, did get him high. I think regardless of impact, I think it's the intent there. The AFL is clearly and has been for many years trying to rub that out, kind of that strike off the ball that does hit maybe your jaw, your chin, or even your neck. It's just unnecessary. I understand he probably wasn't having his best game despite still getting three goals, I think, and was kind of beaten comprehensively in areas of the game. So, you know, as much as frustrations do tend to boil over and, you know, you do try, I guess, impose yourself physically, that type of action just has to be stamped out. And I think a 1 week suspension will stand. And moving to Toby Green's, you know, comes off the ground. I wouldn't say it's similar to Peter Wright, not in any stretch, but I guess the action in someone coming into a marking contest, you bracing yourself for impact. And obviously the intention for Toby was to protect himself as opposed to intentionally hurt Jordan Boyd. You know, just collected him. I think he still played out the game, so no record of concussion or injury. But still, again, something that the AFL is trying to avoid, players coming off the ground. Because once you do, you're at the mercy of, you know, the contact that you do make with the opposition.
Yeah, I think between the three, Green actually probably has the best chance. I know a lot of Essendon fans are a bit up in arms why, you know, he isn't getting, looking at 3 to 4 weeks. And he's only looking at one if he is found guilty. But yeah, there was that brace for impact, which kind of hurts his case a bit in a contest. But it looked like he was, you know, kind of going for the chest mark, and it's a kind of small change in motion. I'm trying to remember the Peter Wright one, but I don't think it was as kind of subtle or small. And he did make contact with the ball in a way, you know, it came off Jordan Boyd. So not like he was first to the ball, but there might be some sway. But like I said, this might rely on something a bit exceptional for Green to get off. And then, yeah, Barras. Dangerous tackle. It didn't look good. No. I think Walters was fine, similar to the Boyd incident. But, you know, if, and this is kind of where it's getting tricky at the moment with the MRO, is if we're looking at outcome or action, and it's kind of back and forth a little bit. Obviously, outcome for this one, not as bad, but the action itself was one that we've seen some pretty bad outcomes for. So if they're looking at the action and if looking at Tom Barras and how he kind of moved Walters and then kind of took him to the ground, it's going to be a hard one to get down to one game. But all three challenged, and you know clubs don't just, you know, make these judgments quickly. They talk with their lawyers and talk with, like, you know, football operations, and there's a lot that goes into it, into kind of deeming if they should challenge or not. And one game bans for Green and Hogan will be pretty significant given they play Brisbane on Thursday night. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting Tuesday night and how the tribunal plays out.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a long one for all those, you know, watching. And I think I might join the webinars to see what's going on, you know, inside. And yeah, I'll try every little on zerohanger.com. But yeah, I think in regards to Barras, I noticed a minor secondary motion. Maybe it is attributed to him being a lot larger and probably stronger than Michael Walters. But again, he probably does need to maybe correct that form of just maybe bringing himself to ground first, then with Walters. But I did notice, as I said, a second motion, which probably does constitute a 1 week suspension.
It is hard for some of those big guys, like even like the Peter Wright and Green ones. If you want to compare them, yeah, you know, you could, if you swap them in places, it could have been different outcomes. But you know, won't deal in hypotheticals all too much here. Moving on, obviously pretty sad news in the last week or so with Nathan Murphy. I guess having the call, it wasn't necessarily his call, but having the call that he'll retire after, I think it was, what, 10 concussions, his last coming in a premiership win for Collingwood, which is kind of a nice way to kind of conclude a career, albeit abruptly, but yeah, I can always say he's a premiership player and was so in his final game in the black and white. But I guess some attention, and particularly with the mid-season draft right around the corner, there will be some attention as to how Collingwood look to fill his role in his list spot, I guess. You know, that they'll have that one opened up. That's the only one they'll have opened up, given Dan McStay is still pushing for a late season return. And they used three at the supplemental selection period earlier this year. So Billy Frampton's done a great job. Craig McRae is certainly pleased with you know, his role in defence alongside Darcy Moore and Jeremy Howe. They've got Charlie Ean and Josh Eyre kind of on standby, Eyre, you know, just still kind of recovering from a hamstring injury. How have you seen, I guess, life without Nathan Murphy to start the season for the Pies?
Yeah, well, as you alluded to, it is quite sad news. He's only 24, played 57 games for Collingwood. He looked like he just finally, most of all of last year, but even, you know, at the back end of 2022 or most of that year anyway, solidified his spot in the defence under Craig McRae. He was playing with freedom and courage and bravery. You can see him peeling off his opponents, you know, making the spoil. But also, which I think a lot of people didn't realise, maybe in the first few weeks of Murphy's absence, it gave Howe and Moore freedom to really play more aggressively off their players and peel off and take those intercept marks, which really, you know, kind of created that momentum off that halfback line, which Collingwood essentially won a premiership off last year. So he's, yeah, his role was pivotal to how they played. But yeah, looking at this year, Frampton has done a good job since joining the side. I think it was round two or three. Charlie Dean got given the first look over the first couple of weeks. So he just kind of provides that kind of, that strong defensive-minded player, that kind of lockdown defender, which we saw, ironically, in the grand final as a defensive forward in Harris Andrews. But now, you know, switching down the other end of the ground, he's doing a similar job on some of the game's key forwards. And again, gives Moore and Howe the freedom, and even Maynard the freedom to play a little bit more aggressively, to peel off and help out when needed. And as you've noticed the last 3 weeks, they're three on the trot now, so they're looking quite strong behind the ball. But as we know, probably in modern football, it is a system-based defence. It's not necessarily one-on-one like it has been, but you do need to have confidence behind the ball, which Frampton has been able to produce in the last three or so weeks.
Mm, yeah, they've got some good options. I'm really big on Charlie Dean. I think he'll come around at some point. He's obviously had a pretty luckless run to start at Collingwood over the last couple of years with injury. Josh Eyre, the same, you know, got that opportunity despite being injured. So that kind of shows the faith they have in him. And then Billy Frampton's, yeah, playing the best footy of his career, which is quite timely for the Pies at the moment. But you would think that they do consider some mid-season draft options. At the moment, I think they're looking at a top 10 selection. They're not going to be right at the front of the queue unless, you know, they fall away over the next month or so. But they'll certainly have a decent shot at someone in their sight. So a few names to kind of consider off the Coates Talent League, Cooper Trembath and Ben Hopkins. So these are the kids that, you know, we've seen like a Ryan Marrick or a Jai Cully that get to go back to the Talent League despite missing the draft last year as an overage prospect, you know, get another chance. And often, you know, we see a lot of these kids picked up in the mid-season draft with strong starts to their 2024 campaign. So yeah, Trembath and Hopkins too, I think that will maybe be a chance, especially if Collingwood are looking for a medium to taller size defender. I think Trembath 193, Hopkins a bit smaller, maybe 190, but two guys who could certainly fill a role or at least add to their depth as maybe longer term options if they are kind of, you know, locking in Frampton and maybe a Dean or Eyre as the now guys. And if they still want to kind of just bolster their defensive stocks, given they've lost Murphy at the moment. And then maybe a more mature age one would be Jacob Blight from Peel Thunder. So he's 23, similar age, but 100 plus kilos, 196 centimetres, so a bit of a bigger body and maybe for more of the bigger key forwards. And that still allows Darcy Moore a bit of freedom, similar to what I guess Frampton can offer at the moment as well. But yeah, one of the best key defenders in the Waffle at the moment, still a young age. I think he was Team of the Year last year. In his first year at Peel Thunder, came over from Claremont. So he's one I think could be a chance. Obviously, all those guys nominated for last year's draft, so they're keen to take that step up and will be eligible for the mid-season draft. So there's a few names there. If they want experienced options, and this is kind of that quick fix, get someone in that's played at this top level before through the mid-season draft. You're looking at a Tom Highmore maybe, and Aidan Bonner. So those guys have gone to the VFL since being delisted at St Kilda and North Melbourne respectively. And yeah, could be an option as those kind of medium, tall-sized players. Probably a bit different, both of them. Highmore a bit more athletic, maybe more of an intercept, good aerial, but clean by his foot. clean by foot and bond a bit bigger size, more of a lockdown. So a couple options there. And then I guess the other option for Collingwood as well is to look a bit longer, maybe skip the mid-season draft and start stockpiling some options for, you know, trade and free agency. So there's going to be a few names that are off contract, albeit are they gettable? Not too sure, but just a few key defenders or, I guess, taller defensive options that the Pies could consider. Jack Herrie and Jake Colajowski, both at Geelong, both unsigned. The Cats have a lot of work to do, obviously, to get a few others locked up. And will there be will a product of their busy list management be having one of their, you know, premiership players potentially on the way out, given how much they have to work through? A few others, Josh Battle and Dougal Howard, both at St Kilda. All these guys are off contract, by the way. Denver Granger Barras, Jack Scrimshaw, two at Hawks. Granger Barras, don't know what he would cost really at this point. Obviously, Hawthorn rated him quite highly, but he just hasn't been able to be the player that they drafted just yet. And obviously injured at the moment is going to hurt. So could come quite cheap for a bloke who was a top 10 pick not too long ago. And then another one might be Nick Haynes at GWS. Bit of experience, you know, he's 30 plus, off contract this year. Not really getting a game at GWS. And certainly could slot into a contending club like Collingwood.
Yeah, I think, personally, if I was the list managers at Collingwood, I'd be looking for kind of a here and now defender. Nathan Murphy, as we've established, you know, he was 24, was kind of ready-made. He was ready at the AFL level. He competed very well and did super job, you know, the last couple of years especially. So I think, you know, with Josh Eyre especially being signed in the preseason, you've alluded to Charlie Dean's, I guess, improvement in the last maybe 12 months. They do have a little bit of young depth there, which hopefully they will start to spike in the next year or 2 years. But whilst they believe, I think as well, they are in the, I guess, contending phase at the moment with some of the aging stars, you know, about to leave in the next 12 to 24 months. I think, especially in the off-season, they'll do look to bring in someone mature age, maybe has a bit of experience under their belt, even in the mid-season draft as well, as you alluded to a few names there, to, as I said, bolster that back line and kind of do the role that Billy Frampton is doing at the moment and also add another bit of depth to the lineup as well.
Yeah, plenty to consider there. And obviously, the mid-season draft, not too far away, just I think it's May 29th.
Yep.
We'll have all that live coverage and plenty of build-up coverage on some of the prospects and clubs and who will have list spots and how all that unfolds. Obviously, pretty exciting time for all involved. Moving on now, MVP votes from the weekend. I think we had four perfect performers. One of them was Harley Reid as well, who probably a bit harsh not to be best on in the Western Derby, but arguably his best performance, if not for that one, I guess, 2 weeks ago. But Harley, 20 votes, another strong performance. He's certainly rising up. Patrick Cripps, best on against GWS. He was absolutely fantastic. And he's among those that have moved into our top 10. Bailey Dale on Thursday night and Brody Grundy on Sunday against the Suns. They're our best on ground. How's the top 10 looking at the moment?
Well, Isaac Haney still holds on to the lead. He's had a stellar start to the season. Wouldn't be a shock if he's leading the Brownlow at this stage as well. As you've alluded to, I think Patrick Cripps does move into the top 10 after a perfect performance against the Giants at Marvel Stadium. Zach Merritt, Essendon skipper, I think he's playing inspired football, probably, in my personal opinion, the best he's played. Mm. He's always been a good accumulator of the football, you know, uses it very well. But now it's seeing that defensive side of things that maybe in the past he has lacked or hasn't produced as consistently. So you're seeing him run down tackles, putting on blocks, smothers, and the like, which you love to see from your captain because that just gets you up and about as well. Zach Butters and Connor Rozee still hold their spots in the top 10 despite quiet performances by their lofty standards. Max Gawn and Christian Petrarca, despite having the bye, are still in our top 10 as well. And Matt Rowell goes to second spot after still a very strong performance, but there was a lot of Sydney players that probably pipped him in their victory as well.
Yeah, a few other notes from round six. Dylan Moore, John Dawson narrowly missing out on 20 vote games. Geelong Brisbane was an interesting one. I don't think any of us could agree on who best of field was. I think I had Stengel, you might add Zorka or Berry.
I had Berry.
And then Jack Bowes was another one. So four different players earning 5 votes from that one. Very evenly shared. I think Stengel was the highest with 13 votes in that game. So a bit out of that one. And then Will Hoskin-Elliott, Nick Dacos sharing bulk honours as well. Hoskin-Elliott, an inspired performance for sure, particularly when the game was on the line and the Pies were just getting their way back into it. So that's how our MVP shapes after 7 rounds and after round 6. I think we're getting to that point now, but it's a bit of parity at the end of this week and will be nice to see how our MVP is really shaping up. And rookie rankings as well. So we've expanded to a top 6 now, as we flagged across the start of the season, that after every 6 weeks from now on, we'll have we'll have an additional rung in our rookie rankings. But staying in the top, someone we've already mentioned on the show, Harley Reid, absolutely fantastic. 3 goals, 19 touches, was 13 contested, 7 clearances, and arguably best of field in the Western Derby. He was absolutely fantastic. And really, this sees his lead atop our rookie rankings grow. Sam Closey moves into second after just 3 games. Really strong start against the Swans on Sunday. A nice long-range goal that he kind of kick-started, which was a nice moment for the Suns, but unfortunately couldn't get the win. So he moves into second. Colin Kirchherr, not quiet, but probably just not impressive. I think he still had 17 touches, but couldn't really move the ball all too accurately. And then some new faces as well in our rookie rankings at spots 5 and 6.
Yeah, so Western Bulldogs is Harvey Gallagher. He was at an injury hit run in 2023, so couldn't get his body right, but has now jumped. I think he's played every game this year under Luke Beveridge. He's 20 or 21 years old. He's full life and he's exciting. He can play up forward. He has a pressure high out forward. He can run between the arcs really well. But also he seems to be going through the midfield as well, which we see him collect a fair bit of ball. He seems to use it quite well and kind of complements maybe the Liberatore's and the Bontempelli's a little bit. I know it is a different look and they're still probably working out the kinks, but I thought it did really work in multiple games this season, especially against the Saints on Thursday night. And Hugo Garcia, which, you know, he was playing against as a St Kilda player, jumps into our rankings as well as a new name after his strong performance, his full four-quarter performance this time around as opposed to last week when he was a sub. So, yeah, definitely plenty of movement. Harvey Thomas moves out. Darcy Wilson's been super for St Kilda in the early stages of the year, obviously still out. And Caleb Windsor does hold on to his spot in fourth, despite the bye for the Ds as well.
Yeah, quite tight, I think, between second. And yeah, even outside of our top six, as you mentioned, Darcy Wilson's one. Riley Sands, if he can get a more full run at a few games over the next couple of weeks, he'll certainly be pushing a case for a top six spot. And yeah, Harvey Thomas perhaps unlikely, but really tight between that, I guess, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and then even outside of that. So that is our rookie rankings after round six. And that'll wrap up Zero Hanger TV following the weekend. Plenty to look forward to this week with all clubs playing. Anzac Day footy, especially a big occasion for Collingwood and Essendon. And we'll be happy to bring that all that action to you in next week's review.